People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
The Foreclosure Relief and Prevention Act, recently signed by the president, is landmark legislation that includes many changes to the low-income tax credit program, the very program that's made possible much of the affordable housing that's been built in this country since 1986. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing. My guest today has been involved in this issue from all sides and has much to tell us about the impact that this new legislation will have on affordable housing. Ronnie Thielen is president of the board of the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition and managing director of Centerline Capital Corporation. Welcome, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Are you still celebrating the passage of this bill?
We certainly are. We're going to celebrate it for a long time till it's fully implemented and we're producing more units.
Well, before we delve into the details, let's set the stage for a moment. How do low-income tax credits work, if you could briefly describe that? And how did the program come into being?
Well, the program came into being, the first year of its use was in 1987. It was a result of the Tax Reform Act of 1986, where they changed a lot of the benefits that investors had in investing in multifamily housing. So we needed something. They pulled something off the rack, basically, and said, well, here's something we'd written a while ago. It's in the tax code, Section 42, and let's implement that and let's go with it. So that's what happened. Now, the program, because it's in the tax code, is a bit complicated. It is administered or overseen by the IRS and administered by the state agencies. Usually, it's the State Housing Finance Agency. In some states like California, they chose to put it in a different agency that specializes specifically in that program. This is a tax program. It provides tax credits to investors. The state allocating agency gets a per capita amount. Each state gets a per capita amount. Each year, right now, well, until the bill passed, the amount was $2 per capita. And there was a change with the bill we'll get into. So they have that $2 per capita times 10 because it's taken over 10 years. So they have this $2 that they can allocate, and it's done based on a qualified allocation plan that is mandated by Section 42, where the state does public hearings, gets input from developers, lenders, syndicators, investors, everybody interested in the program, to set it up in a way that makes it most effective for various parts of each state. So each state's allocation plan is different. There is a competition in California. They do it twice a year. The demand has been at least 3-1 every year in both rounds that they do in the year. So not everybody wins. There's a lot of point chasing, as we call it, and the QAPs will give you points for different things that you do.
And your involvement in this as managing director of Centerline is that you're one of the investors?
Yes, we are a syndicator. We're an intermediary that brings investors in from the top end who buy these tax credits or invest in these tax credits through investment in the property. And I also bring in my role is to bring in developers who have gotten allocations of these credits. And so we bring those two together, price the credits based on the investor's willingness to invest in a certain project.
It's interesting. Well, I have to assume that you and others who were working on changes to the tax credit program were doing so for some time. Who was involved in this effort and why?
Well, there were a lot of us involved. The National Council of State Housing Agencies represents all the state allocating agencies. And the program has been so successful over the last 20 years. There's been over 1.5 million units produced nationally and almost 250,000 in California. And the allocating agencies have done such a good job of being good stewards of the program that the Council of State Housing Agencies agreed with others of us, like the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition, the National Association of Home Builders, and others, that it was really time to give the agencies some more flexibility, clarify some areas that weren't clear, or we were having some disagreements with the IRS, and just give us more room to move with this program.
So how did this tax credit reform bill actually become part of the foreclosure relief package?
Well, we had gotten Charles Rangel, Congressman Rangel from New York, he's been interested in this program from the very beginning. He was one of the original pushers behind this program. He and his staff person, John Shiner, were the ones who really took all of our proposals and put it together into a bill. And this was done a year and a half ago when he first became chairman of Ways and Means Committee. And But we didn't really have a vehicle, and this program is not big enough to have its own bill and run through Congress that way, even though it's very strongly perceived in both houses as a good program. So it started out with Chairman Rangel, and then Senator Cantwell from Washington on the Senate side came out with a bill the beginning of this year, which pretty much mirrored what Charles Rangel had put out, but he was still holding back on his. And then because of all of this, these problems in the subprime and in the economy in general, when this Foreclosure Relief Act came out, this was a perfect vehicle because serendipitously, the kinds of changes that we were looking for would in fact help us with some of the problems that have been created in the last year through the economic decline in financial institutions, in banks, Fannie and Freddie, and all the problems they've been having.
So this wasn't that much of a stretch. It really did fit.
Oh, it fit perfectly. Absolutely. It's a great part of a stimulation bill.
Was there any opposition or any significant opposition, I should say?
There's always some.
Sure.
But there was none that was significant. We had a couple. There always will be some who just don't like a tax program for housing. But this was very, very strongly bipartisan, and it came out. This part of the big bill came out with very strong votes on both sides, the Senate and the House, the Republicans and the Democrats.
Ronnie, how does this current financial market impact the tax credit market?
Well, it's had a tremendous impact, unfortunately. We used to like to think that we were immune to those things because we have this per capita amount. It's affordable housing. There's a market in so many areas of the country for it and such demand. But unfortunately, the investors, Freddie and Fannie, were actually investing in about 40 to 45% of the credits available. So Fannie went into AMT last year and had to begin to sell off some of the investments that they had because they couldn't use them anymore. We can explain AMT a little bit in a minute. And then the banks, as we all know from reading the papers, they're having all kinds of problems. Their stocks are down. They're not sure where they're going to land with the loans that they have in their portfolios. Has nothing to do with the multifamily program, but we've been impacted because nobody knows how much they should be investing. And because of that, and because Fannie and Freddie won't be in for a while, the pricing on the tax credits, where it was almost dollar for dollar, you could get 95 cents to a dollar for every tax credit that was allocated to a project. Now it looks like the market is going to settle down into somewhere around 80 cents, maybe a little lower, maybe a little higher, depending upon the individual project. So we need to make up a gap, and this is going to go a long ways to do that.
So this will make it a little bit less challenging to find investors?
Well, there are a couple of provisions that will help us to find new investors, bring some old investors back in. One is the alternative minimum tax issue.
And this AMT is that you referenced a few minutes ago.
That's correct. AMT, alternative minimum tax. And there are two ways that everybody computes their income tax every year. One is by the normal process we all know about. And the other is you have to do an alternative minimum tax calculation. You pay the higher of the two. So if you get into a situation where you have so many deductions and credits that you don't have, say, any taxes to pay or not very many, then you're going to have to pay the alternative minimum tax. Until this bill passed, investors were not able to use the tax credit, the housing tax credit, against their alternative minimum tax. Now they will be able to. So they will be able to use the amount of credits that they've invested and deduct it from that alternative minimum tax they're supposed to pay. So their taxes will be less.
Are there provisions in the bill that will make it easier for developers like Eden Housing to build and manage tax credit properties?
There are many. All of the changes, and there are probably 25 or 30 total changes, all of them are going to help in one way or the other. But there are some very specific ones that will help because of this pricing decrease I talked about. And three of them that go along that line. One is that we've gotten, for 2008 and 2009, we've gotten a 10% increase in the amount of credits available in each state. So now it's $2.20. So that's going to help provide more credits for this high demand that we have. But then because the prices are lower, we need to get more credits into every deal to make up for that pricing differential. And that can be done with this new per capita amount by the agencies giving them more. But they can also do it because the way the credit is calculated is that there is an applicable credit percentage that's used, and it's determined every month by the IRS. The current rate for the month of August is 7.94%. You multiply that times your basis, which is all of your depreciable costs in the project, and that's how you determine the amount of credits you get. Well, in this bill, they have fixed that credit rate at 9%, which is what we've always called it, because the first year that's what it was, and it's a complicated thing. But in any case, so now we have a 9% credit instead of 7.94. So going forward, and this sunsets in 5 years, and we're going to be a GAO study to make sure the agency is doing their job right. But this will give us more credits per project to the extent that the state agencies allow it. And then you can also get, in certain areas now, HUD can designate areas, difficult development areas, qualified census tracts, where you can get a 30% boost in the amount of credits that you get. But it doesn't cover all the areas, and it's restricted within each state. Now the state agencies will be able to give a 30% boost in areas outside of those areas to give projects more credits, which means more equity, which means less debt, which means rents can be lower and more affordable.
A win-win and win, right?
Absolutely.
So preserving affordable housing is another important goal of all affordable housing organizations. Does this legislation impact preservation efforts as well? And if so, how?
Well, it does. There are a couple of provisions specifically about preservation. Now, again, a lot of these are going to help them anyway, a lot of these other changes. But there is one, and I know Eden was up against this problem, and now they're going to be able to go forward with a project that they were probably going to have to wait several years to do. For any number of reasons, there might be a change in ownership during the past 10 years. And the rule had been in Section 42 that if the ownership had changed in the past 10 years, then you could not get credits on the acquisition portion of the project. Now, the acquisition cost is always a big part of the cost of buying a property, and it's all the costs, almost all the costs except land. So if you can't get the acquisition credit, you're getting phenomenally less in credits to use, and the deals just don't work. So projects like that, you'd have to wait until that 10-year hold period, as we call it, was up. Now, under the new rule, any federally subsidized project or any state subsidized project will be able to will waive that 10-year hold problem. So if it's had to change for some reason 5 years ago, you can now go ahead and get acquisition credits on a federally subsidized or state subsidized project.
It's great news. Are there any other provisions of the Act that impact affordable housing?
Very importantly, I think, particularly San Francisco County and other areas of the country, the way rents are calculated, they're calculated by HUD each year, as they do for their other programs. But we ran across, they started using, instead of the census tract, they started using Community Services database. And this database froze rents in a lot of counties around the country. And that and HUD allowed them to be frozen rather than reducing them, which is really what would have happened, because it showed that the incomes had gone down instead of go up. And so HUD imposed a rent freeze on those. And they couldn't get an increase until the incomes actually got up to where the calculation would give them more. And this was going to hold a county like San Francisco at its rents for as much as 4 or 5 years in the future. Now, obviously, that's going to have a huge impact when your operating costs are not staying stable. So there is a new part of the law that says that you will get an increase every year based on the increase in income, even if the income still doesn't calculate to the rents. So if you get a 2% increase in income between this year and next, you'll get a 2% increase in that frozen rent. So that's going to be extremely helpful.
I imagine you've given a lot of thought as to how implementation of these new provisions are going to play out. What do you envision, Ronnie, as the landscape in the coming months?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I allocated the tax credits in California back in the early 90s, and so I know what it's like to go through these changes. And you have to have a qualified allocation plan, as I might have mentioned earlier, that's in Section 42, and it has certain criteria you have to follow, and others you can add your own sort of desires and things that you think areas of the state might need. So now they're going to have to incorporate this 9% credit, this 30% boost. I think the 30% boost is probably going to be a bit contentious, because developers are all going to want it to be in their area. And so the agency is going to have to figure out how to make this work and how to keep the community happy. They have to do public hearings. They have to go through a process. So that's what will be happening over the next several months. So we hope that by the first of next year, we'll have an allocation plan in every state that will incorporate all of these changes. We also have to get some guidance from the IRS, and that will be our next work on the coalition side is we're putting together a list of areas where we need clarification. We just want confirmation from the IRS that we're interpreting these new laws properly. There are some where you clearly need guidance in the IRS, and they have been very good partners in the past in being reasonable and understanding and interpreting it in ways that help make the program work. So that will be something we'll be working on over the next several months as well.
So you can celebrate, but you can't rest.
That's right. And the other thing we still need to do is we need to educate the investors. We need to let them know now that the AMT is not a problem. There was a liquidity problem in the marketplace. I mentioned that Freddie was selling off their credits last year in the secondary market. In order to do that, you have to post a recapture bond, and that's very expensive. So that has also gone away in this law. And the other thing that we will be telling investors is to go and look at the votes in the House and the Senate and see how popular this program is, what a great investment Congress thinks this program is. And the number of units that have been created, the foreclosures are almost nil in this program. So it's an education to investors to make sure they understand what a safe investment this is.
Well, Ronnie, on behalf of affordable housing advocates everywhere, and certainly all the people who live in affordable housing, I want to thank you for all the work you've done on this. It's quite astounding, and it's a great victory.
Great. Well, thank you. It's been fun to do and very interesting.
Great. And thanks for appearing today on our program. Ronnie Thielen, Managing Director of Centerline Capital Corporation and President of the Board of the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition. For Eden Housing, I'm Joanne Green.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.